These three monastic texts that I have presented, a brief selection from Athanasius' Life of Antony, a selection from the Coptic Life of Evagrius, which is not generally very accessible, and from the story of Benedict in Scholastica, and then of Benedict in the Tower from the dialogues of Gregory the Great. These are examples of how this notion of spiritual ascent, of beholding either the ascent of another into heaven or oneself being transported so one could see the glory of heaven, was seen as being part of what it meant to be a holy and committed Christian. The contemplative has the power to behold the heavens and the even arrival in heaven of holy people. Looking first at Athanasius' Life of Antony, here Antony is on a mountain. He looks upward and sees in the air someone borne aloft and hears a voice coming to him that tells him that this person and the great heavenly host that he saw rejoicing, this was the soul of the monk Amun in Nitria, one of the great founders of the monastic settlement in Nitria, the principal founder of that settlement. He is seen as being one of the great holy people who has preceded Antony in death. Antony, by the way, lives to a very great, extreme old age, well past the age of 100. And it's a reminder of the fact that just as we saw this image in Plato and in Cicero, and then again in Perpetua and in Satyrus' vision in the story of Perpetua and Felicity, the one who beholds God, the one who is seeking to engage in the spiritual journey, sees, as it were, into the heavens and sees something of the just who have ascended there. If we now turn to the Coptic Life of Evagrius, here we have an even clearer reminder of, and perhaps borrowing from, this tradition of not only seeing into the heavens, but, as it were, mysteriously ascending into heaven, and then from the vantage point of heaven, looking back on earth, and seeing how insignificant things are, and how important the quest for virtue is. Evagrius, who is here doing Lectio Divina, meditatively reading one of the prophets, in the middle of the night he finds himself asleep, and as it were suspended in the clouds, looking down on the whole world. The one who had raised him up says, "Do you see all these things?" Namely, the whole world. Evagrius says, "Yes," and he says, "I will give you a commandment. If you keep it, you will be the ruler of all these things you see." And he says, "Go, be compassionate, be humble, keep your thoughts pointed straight to God, and you will rule over all these things, that is, over all the things of earth, all earthly matters, all the pragmata, that is to say, the ordinary things of life, will fall into place if you simply are compassionate, caring towards others, humble, aware of your need of God, and keep your thoughts pointed towards God." And after this, Evagrius finds himself back holding his book, and he contends, or he works with these principal two virtues of compassion and humility, and discovers that in a sense they contain all the virtues. This is a very beautiful story from the sayings of the Lives of the Fathers, but it's developed in a much greater and fuller form in the dialogues of Gregory the Great. This very familiar story to all of us, the story of Benedict and Scholastica in chapter 33, the story of Benedict's vision of Scholastica's ascent into heaven in chapter 34, and then very important, a part of it, as it were, a kind of a spiritual diptych, two icons held together which illuminate each other, Saint Benedict in the tower beholding the glory of God in chapter 35. Father Adalbert de Vogüé, in his commentary on the dialogues, points out the very important interrelationship between these two stories, Benedict and Scholastica on the one hand, and Benedict's vision on the other. And we will have the opportunity too, and we will spend more time to look at this story in more detail, and we will spend more time looking at it a little later in this course. This is an opportunity just to glimpse at it and remind ourselves of several elements in it. Reread the story of Benedict and Scholastica, their delightful banter back and forth, but notice that there's also a slightly grim quality to it. When Benedict says, it's not possible for me to stay outside the monastery, even to share this sacra colloquia, this holy conversation, when Scholastica achieves the imposition of her will by praying and the thunderstorm that prevents Benedict from leaving, notice what happens. Benedict says, may God forgive you, sister, what have you done? He is accusing Scholastica of having opposed God's will. And so at this moment, Benedict is in the place of the Pharisee, and there's probably an allusion to that wonderful and powerful story a little bit later on of the story of the woman who goes to the house of the Pharisee and who gives all that she has, whose love is greater. At this moment, Benedict is, as it were, the Pharisee, the one who does not see. He does not see what God is doing. And Gregory's explanation afterwards about his powerlessness to leave there, as it were, her forgiving banter. Well, I appealed to you and you refused to hear me, so I appeal to the Lord and he has heard me. Benedict has been bested, that is to say, or worsted. He is not triumphed. He is the man of God, the man of power, the man of miracles, but in the dialogues from this moment onward, Benedict performs no more miracles of power. It's as if Gregory is telling us that from this encounter onwards, Benedict is no longer the man in charge. Benedict instead becomes the man who seeks to understand more deeply. He hasn't seen God in Scholastica, God working through Scholastica. He has to be shown it. He has to be, as it were, forced to see it. And now, as a result of that, as a result of learning where true love lies, which is the conclusion of chapter 33, Benedict can become a man of vision. And so in chapter 34, he sees Scholastica's soul ascend into the secret recesses of heaven, very like Antony's vision of Amun. And then Benedict remains a man not of miracles, not of power, but simply a vision. In chapter 35, the story of the tower window. Benedict has a visit from another abbot, a very interesting parallel to the story with Scholastica. They too have sacra colloquia, holy conversation. But in the night, Benedict is standing, preparing for the vigil office by being at prayer. And then, as the text says, in the dead of night, he beholds an outpouring of light from above. It sweeps away the darkness, shines surpassing the light of day. And then after that, vision of light and the sweeping away of all darkness, he sees the whole world gathered beneath a single sunbeam. This scintillating light beholds the whole of the world, and he sees, just as he saw the soul of Scholastica, he sees the soul of Germanus, the Bishop of Capua, ascending into heaven. Gregory goes on to explain in verses 5 through 7 what this means. Benedict is able to behold the whole of creation because his heart is expanded. In the light of God, his inward self is opened wide, and he is enabled to see God. So this is a meditation on and a reflection on what it means to behold the glory of God. Benedict, who's been shown where love truly lies, who has learned from his own failure to perceive God in the interaction with Scholastica, has now become capable of vision, and in the vision of God, his heart is expanded, dilatato cor inerabilis, just exactly as Benedict says in the prologue to the rule, our hearts are widened, are expanded as we run in the way of God's commandments. So these are three examples of celestial vision and of ascent, and it's a reminder of the fact that in the Christian and the monastic contemplative tradition, this describes the expanding, the opening up of the heart through the vision of God.